Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, CPG advisor and now founder of It's All Happening, an agency that helps brands with launch strategy. Tune in as we break down ways that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles and celebrating the wins. We cover how brands are taking products to market, tactics that work, things that have failed, and just lessons learned from out in the field. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or launching a brand, this is the place. All right, you guys, I just hung up with the co-founders of Yes Way Rosé. Yes Way Rosé was a lifestyle brand that these two women started. By the way, they're best friends. Love a best friend founder story. They started this company in 2013 just with an Instagram account and some swag because they loved French rosé. And it has since then snowballed into this insane company. And they now have their own product, which they launched in 2018. And they recently launched a non-alcoholic version of the product. They are on fire, you guys. Okay, so I'm going to introduce some incredible stats about what's happening in their category and how they're stacking up. I have to say, I love their strategy and the strategic partnerships that they decided to take in order to get this brand off the ground is very interesting. And it's definitely not a typical CPG story. So if you don't know who Yes Way Rosé is, you can probably find it at your local grocery store because they have tons of distribution. Without further ado, my conversation with Erica and Nikki of Yes Way Rosé. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the It's All Happening Women and CPG podcast. Today, I'm here with Erica Small and Nikki Huguenaire, co-founders of Yes Way Rosé. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
I am so excited to talk about Yes Way Rosé. I've been a fan of the brand for some time now and a drinker of the brand, so I can't wait to talk about all of the amazing growth and everything that's been happening for you guys behind the scenes. But before we dive in, there's a couple like really impressive, interesting stats that I just wanted to drop about the brand to kind of kick us off. Yes Way Rosé started as a lifestyle brand, and you guys have really cultivated a super engaged community around the love for rosé before you introduced your namesake wine, which is now the number 4 overall rosé in the US, which is extremely impressive. And while the rosé category is down, you know, significantly, I think it's like over 4%, 3-4%. Yes Way Rosé is up on an average of 20% in the last year. Those are like very impressive stats when it comes to data. So how is this happening? How have you guys managed to stay on top and become a category leader in this declining alcohol category?
Well, thank you so much for sharing that. And we really focus on creating an incredible product first and foremost. So we try to hit all of the notes. The packaging is amazing, which Nikki designs. It's a super cute brand. But the reason people keep coming back to it is because the wine is delicious. It's this classic dry French rosé, super refreshing. And we try to have the most competitive pricing possible and keep it approachable and accessible. I think people are still trying the wine for the first time. And we're trying to meet the consumer where they are and reach, you know, many new consumers while also maintaining our existing consumer. But the reason they keep coming back is because the wine is so great. And I think that has contributed a lot to the longevity of the brand.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. It's a great bottle of rosé. Like, I love it.
Thank you.
Sarah sent me some, but I've been a fan for a while. So, okay. Love all of that. I want to hear about what life was like and what you guys were doing before Yes Way.
Before we started, I worked in fashion as a writer and an editor, and I wrote a column for the New York Times style section and contributed towards magazines and did some writing for brands. And Nikki is my best friend, and we have known each other since middle school, but reconnected in New York City, ran into each other on the street, and we fell in love with rosé together, and we were going out all the time. I would get the house red, Nikki would get the house white. We never had a signature drink, a go-to drink, and then when we discovered French rosé, it changed absolutely everything. Well, Nikki should interject with her background because it's really the combination of our backgrounds that has allowed us to create this brand.
Yes, please. I want to hear, Nikki.
Yeah, so my background is in graphic design and art direction. I started out in magazines, and that's where Erica and I briefly overlapped at the Jane magazine, RIP. I was working in the art department, and she was fashion editor. And then I went on to working for brands like Madewell and Birchbox, doing design. And so, yeah, our kind of powers combined into this kind of...
And how did you decide that rosé was it for the two of you? Like, did you aspire to start an alcohol brand or a wine brand? I'm just curious, like, how you're like, yes, rosé is where we're headed.
I think at the time, we just really fell in love with this wine. And it was more than just the taste. It was the color. It was the south of France. It was the feeling around it and the jokes between us. Yeah. And so we had this shared passion. And it really kind of took over our, you know, it just became like this thing that we share this obsession for all of those reasons. And so I will say at the same time, I had been working in fashion and writing for a certain amount of time. And I knew in the back of my mind that that wasn't going to be the path forward for me, that I wanted to do something else. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know exactly what that looked like, but this rosé passion and that kind of being in the back of my mind, something subconsciously clicked. And then it came to the forefront and it was like, oh, this is this thing we have to do. And then it became this very powerful feeling like this is the path forward. And I don't know exactly what that looks like, but this is the road we need to go down. So Nikki and I started this Instagram account one weekend in 2013 at Yes We Rosé. A few weeks later, Nikki designed our first product, a tote bag that has our logo on it, the same logo that made it onto the bottle a few years later. And so we were just, you know, she was able to make this kind of abstract idea that I had more tangible, that we could create this sort of rosé world. And that was how it started. And from the beginning, we really leaned into building a community, which then allowed us to eventually create the wine that we wanted to make.
Okay, so you started building your community like well before you guys actually had the wine. Am I getting that timeline correct?
Yeah, I think also in the beginning, I mean, we didn't really know anything about wine besides the fact that we loved rosé.
Right.
So I don't think it occurred to us at the very beginning, oh, we could have our own wine, because it was so...
I see.
It was so far-fetched. So we were like, what? We have this passion. We want to turn it into something. So we turned it into more of a lifestyle brand. We turned it into this kind of Instagram account that became an online community. We had our tote bags, our sweatshirts with the logo on it. And it was more about like building that, this Yes We Rosé brand as a lifestyle brand and community of fellow rosé enthusiasts. Yeah. That then the more we began to learn about wine and meet people in the industry, we started to put the pieces together and do the, you know, research and learn everything there was to learn to become experts, to be able to, you know, figure out how to bring the wine to life.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, the alcohol industry in general, I think it's not necessarily the alcohol industry, it's the world of alcohol distribution is so complex and nuanced, right? Like there's so much to it. Like, did you guys realize what you were getting yourselves into?
No.
Yeah. Well, definitely in the beginning, we didn't really know what we were getting ourselves into when we were starting our lifestyle brand, I think, with that. But at that point, we, you know, the lifestyle started in 2013. The wine hit the shelves in 2018. So we had a lot of life experience as business owners, as entrepreneurs by that point, as, you know, managing different, you know, partnerships and a lifestyle brand. And for us, the pieces all fell together pretty organically in terms of the distribution part of it and how we ended up to be able to have our wine in stores. But it is very complicated. And yeah, for us, we had sent a lifestyle like designer collaboration deck to Target. And at the same time, we were doing all the research for and meeting with everyone we could about how to get Yesi Rosé wine made. And our deck got in the hands of the adult beverage buyer who said, if this wine was made, I would sell it or I would carry it.
I would bring it
in.
And
that kicked things into high gear because we had already created this demand with our, and this community built in consumer with our following and with the brand already. So having that retailer in place who was passionate about the brand and shortly thereafter was available in many other stores across the country, that really helps make it a lot easier. That versus if you're just making a product and then being like, okay, where is this going to go?
Absolutely. Having that anchor retailer, especially one of the biggest like Target, to support the launch solves so many problems. Yeah, that's a very interesting piece of the puzzle that I think is important about your story. I love that. So you guys started a partnership with Prestige Beverage Group. I would love to, like, if you could share a little bit about what that has looked like for you guys.
Yeah, so we like Erica said, we were doing research into the different ways, you know, we were meeting with people who own vineyards in France. We were meeting with people who had started their own wines. We were like, okay, these are all the different ways you could bring something to life. And we were like, we really want to focus on what our strengths are, which are kind of the branding, the product, the innovation, like this, the vision, right? We really didn't have a huge interest in figuring out how to do the literal like heavy lifting of like the importing, the distribution, all that. So
I don't blame you.
That is kind of what led us to meeting with Prestige, and they were really excited about the idea and kind of had everything that we needed in a partner, like that infrastructure, the connections. They had the relationships with the French winemakers. They had the relationships with the retailers. They had, you know, built-in distribution network. So it really made perfect sense for us, and it's allowed us to do what we do best, and it's been a great partnership.
Yeah.
And we work really closely together. So, you know, we're always working in tandem.
Yeah. So a strategic partner like that, I feel like, especially for this type of category, is like, must have been absolutely crucial to you guys to like making this world actually become a real thing, to actually getting the product in the States. And that's why I'm obsessed with your product, because it's French rosé and I like love French wines. So that's why the product really just tastes so good. So I want to like shift gears and talk about community. What was like this community like when you first started building it in 2013? Because like you guys have a significant social following, right? What did you actually do to build this community? Like, I'm so curious how you started it. Sounds like you started with an Instagram account and a tote, right? You said, yeah. Nikki? Like, or Erica?
We called it a tote.
I think it was extremely wildly organic at the time. I mean, this was in 2013. So our community started that I would do something pretty unacceptable today, which is take friends' phones and be like, oh, you have to follow this thing that we're doing. And just like follow our account from their phones, which obviously no one would let you do that today because it was a whole different world in 2013.
Yeah.
So that's really like one of the topics, and it was our friends, and it was the word of mouth. It was this very kind of insider thing. We would people would stop us on the streets about the tote, and then we would sell it to them. And the, you know, we'd leave our offices and sell it to them, or run upstairs to our apartment and get it. And then that's, so it was very grassroots to begin with. And then the products were selling more. We got some, you know, people were interested in how we were talking about rosé, which is really leaning into, you know, cult pop culture, and we could connect it to so many different things and a lot of humor. So I think we had some posts that went viral, and that helped build the community. Drew Barrymore wore our sweatshirt, and she posted it on her account, and that really kicked things into high gear as well. Mm-hmm. But it was a very like slow and steady growth. It wasn't this overnight, like, oh, we had 10,000 followers overnight.
Right.
We really worked hard for them.
I have a question for you. Are you running in circles every month and stalling yourself out, missing out on sales? You're just like doing endless research because you're trying to figure it all out on your own. Maybe you're confused on how to price your product, how much margin you'll need, if you're going to be profitable. You really don't know how much startup capital you're going to need. You're lost on what to spend and what's reasonable. And you don't have any clue really on how to build an operating budget. Maybe you can't get a manufacturer to answer your emails, and you're not sure if you need to spend money on an R&D partner. And then when it comes to retail, you just don't even know where to start. You never successfully pitched to a retail buyer or an investor, and you could really use some guidance and framework. You might not have any clue on how to figure out which channels to launch in and how to determine when it's time to open up new ones. And I know that you really want to launch your brand, but you just don't feel confident that you have the right information and strategy to be successful. So let me help you de-risk your investment. This is what we do in Launch Lab. I guide you through my four-part framework that teaches you exactly how to launch your food and beverage brand successfully. You'll get a complete toolkit that will take you through the step-by-step process, and you'll have access to a founder community so you can build alongside others who are in the same shoes and at similar stages, where you network inside of our Slack channel. You have access to me specifically in office hours every week, where you come with your questions and I give you real live operator-led feedback. There's two ways to join Launch Lab. You can join our live cohort, which happens twice a year in March and in September. These are 10-week cohorts that kick off and run 4 days a week. If you want to get started now and it's not March or September, you miss a sign up, no worries. We have the pre-recorded version running all the time, so you can join at your leisure whenever it works for you. So stop stressing out, start de-risking your investment and getting a real launch plan together. Check out itsallhappeningagency.co/launch-course. So when it was an Instagram account, were you collecting, like, were you making sales before the rosé? Like, were you, you know, off your swag and your merch?
Yeah, we were selling our lifestyle products as the business.
And then 2013, like, that was a long time ago, right? You guys were probably very different people then. I mean, I was a completely different person in 2013, right? So how have things changed? And I guess this sort of like segues into the next thing that I want to make sure we really talk about is your NA line. I believe the two of you were pregnant at the same time. Is that correct? And that's how like the NA line started.
Yeah. So we definitely were more in our party era back in 2013. And it was a really fun time for us just building this brand. But yeah, a lot's changed. We're both now married and had kids. We were, you know, we're interested in NA for a couple of years, but last year we were both pregnant at the same time, and that kind of kicked it into high gear. We were both craving, missing our that crisp glass of rosé. And there wasn't really anything out there that we felt really captured what we love about rosé that was worthy of like a proper glass and like delivered the experience that we were looking for and that our wine delivers. So that was definitely jump-started the process. We spent a lot of time kind of perfecting that product, and we're really proud of where we ended up. And we just launched, a couple months ago.
Yeah. And how is the NA product going? Like, what has been the feedback on just the product? And I'm curious, has it picked up a ton of distribution yet?
The feedback has been really positive because the reason we wanted to do the still rosé is that there is a lot of a lot of sparkling already in the market, mm-hmm. and a still wine that doesn't have the effervescence or bubbly to kind of help or hide behind is more challenging. But we thought that that was a worthy challenge and a great opportunity for us because we're known for our still French rosé. So we want to be known for our still non-alcoholic French rosé as well. So the feedback has been great that it really tastes like rosé. I think it really surprises people how much it tastes like rosé and delivers that experience of having a glass of chilled rosé just without the alcohol. So the feedback has been great. The distribution has been off to a great start. And we are in Albertsons and we're going to be in Publix starting in June and a bunch of other retailers across the country. So yeah, it's been great.
Yeah. I mean, surely, obviously you guys like look at data, I'm sure, all the time. And like, have you been looking at the data and like really studying, oh, wow, we need to make sure we diversify into this NA market as well too? Or did you make the decision to get into this also because you felt like there just wasn't a great product out there? Like, was it a mix of both of like making sure that there was an NA offering for your audience? Because clearly the NA world has totally exploded.
Yeah, I think for us, the way we think of it as it's like just changing consumer habits of how people are drinking, not necessarily like, oh, there's, you know, we made this for so sober people can have rosé too. It's more like we think about our existing customers who might be pregnant or who might just not want to have a glass of, you know, alcoholic rosé on a Tuesday but want to have one on Thursday. So it's kind of like the idea is more people are just want options. So it's really about giving people options so they can kind of choose what they want to do when. Just evolving with like all the many different reasons people might not want to drink on any given day.
And you guys, on that topic, you have several SKUs. You have a sparkling SKU, you have an RTD. Can you talk us through, because I feel like this is something that founders like really are always thinking about. How do I know when it's time to launch a different SKU or a different pack size or a different format? What were the signals that you guys had? Like, how did you know that it was time to get into sparkling? How did you know it was time to get into RTD?
Our first product we released is our still rosé, which is our number one SKU and still our top seller. Mm-hmm. And it was later that first year that we first released the sparkling. Mm. So it was a really strong release with the still wine in 2018, and then shortly after the sparkling. And then the following after that is the cans, which are really consumers love and are selling incredibly well. You know, just the format is great and the packaging is so cute and the wine is, you know, this French rosé in a can. So it's really a delicious product. And then it's actually been quite a while since we launched another core SKU with the non-alcoholic because we want our products to be very intentional. Mm-hmm. And we've focused on growing that core brand of we want to do rosé. We want to do rosé really well. We want people to come to us for rosé. And so we've been focused on growing those SKUs And then this year, the non-alcoholic, we felt was a really great time. And we also just introduced a half bottle of the still rosé as well. So another really flexible format so people can try the wine if they still haven't, you know, in the half bottle size, or maybe they only want 2.5 glasses.
I love it when a brand just like really doubles down on like one core thing. And that's why I think you guys are just like so successful, is because you have just said, rosé is our thing. I'll bet there was people out there at the beginning that are like, are you sure you want to be rosé? What if you want to do other types of wines? Did anyone ever say that to you guys? Or did you ever like think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely considered all types of, you know, ways we could be expanding. But, you know, like Erica said, like we keep coming back to, you know what, this, we love rosé. We know rosé. This is what we do.
Yeah.
You know, I love drinking red and white wine too, but I don't know nearly as much about them, you know, as I know about rosé. And so it just, yeah, it just feels kind
We're
of
working.
It's true to us. It's working.
It's working.
And it doesn't feel limiting either.
I completely agree. It's working. And like, you're really owning what you know and what is been successful for you guys. I feel like people get distracted really easily, right? It's like so easy to, when you're having success, to get distracted. And like you guys staying focused on that is like a huge piece of the recipe of the success.
Yeah, but to be honest, sometimes our, you know, brains have wandered in previous years. They're like, what if we do this? And what if we do that? And we explore that. And then we come back to what we know and what we should be focusing on.
Yeah.
It's not a straight line.
Right. So I'm curious about your roles. So Nikki, I know you're the designer, but how have you guys like divided up your responsibilities and your roles and just like the co-founder dynamic?
I really focus on the voice, storytelling, vision of the brand. I think we both work really well as partners as well. So it's not like one of us is working in a vacuum. We kind of have this two-factor authentication system for the brand that both of us have to be on the same page about. And that's how we keep it tight, you know, keep it really consistent. So yeah, my background as a writer and editor has shaped, how we talk about the brand, how the brand shows up, the voice. And, you know, Nikki is our visual identity extraordinaire.
What does the team look like for you guys?
It's really Erica and I, our side, are the only full-time people. Then obviously we have our partners at Prestige. You know, we have a brand manager over there and then all the team and infrastructure there. And then we work with some great consultants, freelancers, or help with things like social and marketing, but we're, you know, we're leading all of that.
Okay. So super lean, small team. I love that. And you guys, I would imagine, well, you're remote because you're on, Erica, you're in LA, and Nikki, you're in Baltimore, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Everybody's remote.
Low overhead. I love that. Okay. Okay. So I want to hear, what would you guys say to a female founder that's early stage that is just getting going? Sage advice.
I guess the sage advice is that the product really matters and that you can have a great brand and a lot of buzz, but if people don't come back to it, it won't last. And that's, you know, has just been our experience. Yeah, we've seen a lot of brands come and go, but what helps with the longevity is when people want to keep coming back to you. So to stay focused on that and not lose sight, you know, when there's so much noise about all the different buzz elements to starting a brand.
Yeah, that's great advice. And how about you, Nikki?
I guess, similarly.
It's okay.
I think Nikki also talks about, you know, when we talk about this, about, you know, the balance between moving quickly and taking the time to get things right. That like, that's another, you know, something else you need to find the balance within. I don't know if Nikki, you want to speak to that?
Oh, yeah. It's kind of similar to what you were saying, though. It's like, you know, taking the time to get your product right so that you're not rushing things. Or, you know, we saw a lot of brands in the kind of like rosé boom back in the day rush to market, potentially even beat us to market with the wine, where we were upset by that and felt like the end of the world. But then when we finally got our product, our wine on the shelf, we're still growing and still strong 6-7 years later, when not all those brands even exist anymore. So I think it's a testament to like doing what you do well and taking your time to get it right.
Yeah. Did you guys bootstrap this brand at the beginning? And then have you raised a series of funds, or how has that all played out for you guys?
Yeah. So we put, you know, when we founded the lifestyle brand, we each put $100 in to like make our first batch of tote bags. And then we kept putting, you know, the money that we would make from, we still had other jobs at that time. We were putting the money we were making from the products back into like developing new products, ordering our next round of sweatshirts and all that. And then when we did go to make the wine, that was one of the considerations when we decided to go the strategic partner route. It kind of allowed us to create this brand without needing a large influx of capital because of the way we set up our partnership.
So have you taken in venture capital money?
No, none.
There was a brief period when we were making this transition to going all in on wanting to make our wine and wanting to leave our jobs, other jobs, so we could really focus on it. And we had to take that leap that we took, you know, small bridge loans from our families that we paid back in under a year. But by building the brand in the way we did and then allowing us to partner in the way that we did as well, we were able to grow and finance in a very controlled way. And that meant not having to, you know, take any outside capital.
That's super cool. So Prestige is actually, they're an actual partner in your company then. You guys are actual part. Yes, yes. That's amazing. That's such a creative way to get a brand off the ground, because a company like that really needs founders like you guys, and founders like you guys really need a company like them. So it's like such a mutually beneficial partnership, right?
Yeah, right. Totally. I guess this goes back to like another piece of advice, which is there's no right or wrong way to grow your brand. We chose this route because it allowed us to focus on what we do best and also live the lives that we want to live. You know, we have a little bit more, you know, flexibility. Nikki and I just knew, like, we knew what was going to be involved to become a wine importer, and that just wasn't going to work for us. So that has been liberating for us in a lot of ways and allowed us to grow the brand.
Is a long-term goal of the company to have some type of strategic acquisition, or are we trying to hold on to the company?
I think we always wanted to create, you know, a long-lasting brand, something that will be around for a long time. We still feel like there's a lot of room to grow. We have a lot of ideas for innovation, and you know, we have our 10-year anniversary of the wine coming up that we're really excited about. And so we're not done yet, but you know, we do think it's important that the brand can exist, you know, without us in the future potentially. But we have a lot left we want to do.
Well, ladies, this was such a fun conversation. I really admire how focused and, you know, strategic you guys have been with building this business. I think this is like such a good message for so many of the early stage founders out there that are like trying to get their sea legs and figure out how to get their idea out there. So thank you for sharing your strategy. This was like super helpful.
Thank you for having us.
And for anybody who's listening and isn't familiar with the brand, which I'm sure there's like nobody out there that isn't familiar with the brand, but how can people find you?
Well, we're in retailers nationwide. The best way is our website. We have a store locator, yesrosé.com. You can find us near you, and you can also order the wine directly from the website as well.
Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. And yes, I will chat with you all soon.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. It would mean so much to me if you like, subscribe, or share this episode with anyone who you think needs to hear. And if you're launching a brand and you need a CPG strategy advisor, visit my website to check out what we have to offer. I host free workshops from time to time. You have to sign up for emails to hear about those. And you can join Launch Lab, which is our group cohort that teaches you the four critical phases of launching your CPG brand and how to actually execute your launch quickly. We also do one-on-one advising. So if you book a profit plan session, I will assess your product profitability and recommend a package that works for you. You can book a call at itsallhappeningagency.co. You can email us at hi@itsallhappeningagency.co. And follow us on Instagram at It's All Happening Co. See you soon.